This episode of Guitar Radio Show is brought to you in part by 2 of 3, the latest release from guitarist Steve Cone, is a true testament to rock guitar and how it should be played. From start to finish, a guitar tour de force you'll listen to over and over again. Steve Cone, 2 of 3, available at iTunes, Amazon, and CD Baby. Steve Cone, 2 of 3. DNA Guitars. Go to DNAGuitarCompany.com. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 106 of Guitar Radio Show, the show dedicated to all things guitar, dedicated to the guitar player, guitar builder, gear maker, and purveyors of such items that you may not know about, but you should. My name is Mark Davin. I'm your host. And as we start to plummet into NAMM week, this episode comes out on the 20th. And the NAMM show in Anaheim, California starts on the 21st. We beg the question, what's up with Gibson? We've noticed me and the rest of the folks here at Guitar Radio Show, Adam Hunt and Steve Cone, we've noticed that there's been a change in some of the work. I mean, you know, people have been saying it for a long time. We're not the only ones. And since we love the brand so much, we got together, the three of us, to discuss it. And, you know, it's for some folks, this might piss some people off. And for others, you might be in agreement with us. I mean, we see what we see. Some of the music you're going to hear right before this was recorded with over half a dozen different Gibson instruments. And we put together a little opening for the thing of just some pure-ass rock and roll that will go right into the content of the episode for today. Folks, don't forget guitarradioshow.com, guitarradioshow@gmail.com. Please check out our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, and we will follow you back, and not in the creepy way. You can hear this show on guitarradioshow.com, of course, where I highly recommend you go to, because we, you know, if you check us out on iTunes and Stitcher Radio and iPod Directory and Podbay and Podomatic and Player FM and all those other great places, that's fantastic, and we love it. Please rate and review the show. But come visit us over at guitarradioshow.com, because we have chocolate. No, I mean, what I really mean to say is we've got a lot more content. So for each episode that we do, we post also some video, and there's show notes, and there's links and stuff like that. So we're going to get started. Are you ready? Here we go. We are hoping for nothing but the best from the NAMM show this year, and hoping that Gibson is going to blow our socks off with some really, really good stuff. And hopefully they'll clean up maybe they'll dress those frets a little bit better. That's my biggest complaint. Okay, we're hoping we're not going to piss too many people off, but, you know, we care. That's why we're talking about it. If we didn't care, we wouldn't even say a word. So that makes some people wonder, gee, what are they not talking about? All right, you ready? Guitar Radio Show. GuitarRadioShow.com. All right, folks, today on Guitar Radio Show, we've got folks that you hear me talk about all the time, and every once in a while you get to hear one of them talk to us all about the gear that he likes to buy. We have with us today Adam Hunt, who does our blogs. How are you, Adam?
I'm doing great.
And we have Mr. Steve Cone. How are you, Steve?
I'm doing good.
Steve joins us for the gas reports. We're here today to talk about Gibson guitars. The three of us are all devotees. We love Gibson guitars. We've lusted after them for years and years. We've owned many. Steve owns way too many. We're just speculating on, and last year Adam did a blog on, you know, Gibson guitars. Is Gibson guitars going to survive? What's happening with Gibson guitars? Because it's been really weird. Things have been very, very different. The quality, we've all noticed that the quality is different. We're still shaking our heads about why they would spend millions of dollars on research and development on this auto-tune thing. And then it seems that with that came production models that weren't really up to snuff. So we recently just found an article from the Tennessean in Nashville that came out on August 8th, 2015, that has the May credit opinion by Moody Investor Service that the Gibson brand or the Gibson company is doing incredibly well. Whereas the guitar company itself, to the people who love it, maybe not so much. Guys, what do you think?
Adam, go first.
Yeah, I think Mark hit upon something really very salient, which is, of course, producing a lot of models which were not necessarily resonant with the core constituency of Gibson. Because I think one of the big selling points of Gibson is it has a built-in audience. It's a built-in core following. And for the truly devout, you might be able to find an equally as good instrument, say, from any number of people, say like a Don Gross 59 spec or a Johann Gustafsson Bluesmaster. But as long as it doesn't say Gibson on the headstock, they're not going to buy it. Mm-hmm. That said, however, they've had some real missteps. I think more recently was that whole Dusk Tiger thing they came up with a couple of years ago. And, of course, the robot tuners, which is kind of like the Kanye West of tuning machines. I mean, either you can do it by ear and do it accurately, or you can't.
Well, that's a good way of putting it. The Kanye West of tuning machines. That's pretty good. What do you think, Steve?
Yeah, well, if we're just talking about this last year's models, they just came out with some, I can't remember what their special edition or whatever guitars, but they have the old spec necks, you know, regular nut, but the only flaw is they still have those auto tuner on there, which they call the G-Force this year.
Right.
And last few years before that was that Mini Tune, and the robot obviously was the first one that came out.
Right. They've had six incarnations of this thing already.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't realize there was that many.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for me, I mean, I got on a big kick buying Les Pauls at the end, right before all the new ones came out, just because I was seeing all that change and I was getting them for really cheap, you know, 2014s, 2013s. As far as the auto-tuning thing, I don't know if we want to talk about that now, but I just got a Les Paul Special Pro, which is it was like a mid-season replacement show. It came out with the normal spec neck, you know, normal width, 60s profile neck, but it had the auto-tuner on it. And yeah, I was setting it up yesterday, and the one thing I liked about it, the auto-tuner, is that when I had new strings on it, I just strummed it, and it actually tuned it up all the way for me. So, I mean, I still had to stretch them and everything, but it was amazing how fast it did tune it that way. Do I like it overall? Not really, because two of the other guitars I had, I actually took them off and sold the on eBay. Some guy in Russia bought one of them, so I'm not crazy about that auto-tuner, and you're going to see they'll probably just go back to offering it with it and without it, which they should have done this season. They just made too many changes this last year for, I think, anybody that's a diehard Gibson.
Well, yeah,
fan.
Yeah. How many new models were there?
Oh, I mean, you can't keep up. But then again, I know we're not talking about Fender, but Fender's the same way. How many different types of Fenders can you buy now?
Well, that's true.
You know, it's crazy.
Neither one is without sin here, but you I know that you were, there was one in particular, one Les Paul that came your way this past year that you had some fret issues with. And
oh, actually quite a few of them. The 70s tribute, the 60s tribute, you know, they're lower end guitars, you know, and I got them for really cheap. That's why I bought them. But mm-hmm. Yeah, the fret ends were like, you know, somebody was taking a saw and hacking my fingers off when I was playing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I did buy a tool that's for dressing frets, and I worked on them, and now they play like butter, you know.
Yeah.
But for something, you're buying a new guitar, you shouldn't have to do that, as opposed to like the Paul Reed Smiths. You know, I bought a few of those S2s, which are American guitars, kind of. And those frets are unbelievably dressed. So, you know, why can't Gibson do it if Paul Reed Smith can do it?
Well, that's the thing. I think we're looking at a company that's 121 years old. It's a brand that everybody knows. So it's kind of disillusioning and surprising to me that this is happening. I mean, I just played my 2005 right before we all went on the air here. And I got to tell you, man, every time I pick up that instrument, I go, wow, I know where the money went. It's an excellent instrument.
Right.
Well, if you consider that C.F. Martin is a 180-year-old company, they've really got their act together, too, because we do know before Chris Martin took over, they were really on the ropes. I mean, their QC was really awful. You pick up, you know, a Dreadnought from the 70s, it's not a great guitar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of the newer ones, particularly the Golden Age ones, are fantastic. They're very, very nice. You can't say that about a new Gibson. And I know that Steve was talking about fret dressing from Gibson. They're essentially using the same sort of techniques they were doing back in the 50s. So they would put in the frets in the fretboard before gluing it to the rest of the neck, and they would dress the frets using a belt sander. I mean, that probably makes good sense if you were looking at it in terms of just cranking out numbers, but not so great if you're looking for, you know, a finished product, particularly for the price level that they're asking for.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I tried a 2013 standard next to PRS S2, and there was no comparison in terms of that sort of finishing work.
Right.
And it's a question, of course, of, you know, which do you prefer better, which really blows your hair back. But it was hard to justify the guitar that had a dried-out fingerboard, which was chalky, and poorly dressed frets for something which was nearly $1,500 less.
Mm-hmm. Well, all right. So let me pose this question to you guys then. Assuming that Gibson Guitars is being run as a separate entity within the Gibson brand, you know, and has its own coffer, and they're not borrowing from Peter to pay Paul and stuff like that with all the other brands that they have, which like Sirwin Vegar and Onkyo and Tiak and now Philips Home Entertainment, Wurlitzer, and on and on and on. If the company is in and of itself, I mean, from what they're saying, it's solvent. The company is solvent. Do you think that the reason that we're seeing this, what we consider to be shoddy workmanship, do you think we're seeing that as a way to cut corners because of the millions of dollars that and Juskowitz says it's millions of dollars of research and development for the autotune? Do you think that's why we're seeing shoddy workmanship?
Oh, you think maybe they're cutting back because they spent all the money on the autotuner?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I think they're just trying to put out a cheaper product, you know, and if they don't spend an extra 45 minutes to an hour on the frets, they're saving money that way.
Yeah, but I'm hearing people that are spending $4,900 on a Gibson Les Paul Trad, and they're saying the same thing about the frets. That's
Okay. See, I only have a couple higher end. I got that ES Les Paul, and that actually was really nice.
Yeah,
that was a higher end Les Paul, you know. But yeah, I guess it's a matter of what you get. Who knows, you know?
Well, I think
worked on it.
I think consistency has always been a real bugbear of Gibson, depending on how far back you want to go. when people were even talking about the real golden years of Gibson, say like even in 59, that the 600 were made in 59, they are really highly variable.
Oh,
because
yeah.
They couldn't wind the pickups consistently from right. one to another.
Right.
But I think if I understand part of your question correctly, could Gibson Guitars be a salient company apart from the rest of the Gibson Music Corporation? I honestly don't think they could stand on their own 2 feet.
So you think they are borrowing from Peter to pay Paul, then?
I think so. And I think one of the things is, too, is that the we've seen even with they have a big acoustic production facility out in Montana. They're not even the acoustic guitars aren't even done in Nashville. Even, right. even those are highly variable.
Right, but I don't hear nearly as many complaints about the stuff in Montana as I do about the stuff in Nashville.
I don't either, Steve.
Yeah, me either. You know, and the other thing is, I mean, I think people have loved Gibson, we'll just say a Les Paul forever, right?
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, when they made the changes they did this last year, anybody that's a diehard fan, they're going to just jump on them. And it's like a bandwagon. Everybody seems to be slamming them for, you know, what they did this last year, which is understandable. But we'll see what happens next year, what the new models will be. You know, because I'm curious to see what they're going to do overall. Because,
yeah.
I've had that conversation with you, Mark. I told you about the speaker monitors for studios. You know, they have, like, the flame front. Have you seen those?
No.
They have monitors that
they're Yes.
You can get them, like, a cherry sunburst
right.
flame front. Or,
yes.
I mean, they're definitely spreading out into that area. And I also saw an interview where they bought Cakewalk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. Who knows what's going on there? I can't even speculate.
Now, you know, I got to say, Henry Juskowitz is a smart guy. He's an incredibly smart guy. And you know, he's looking at the overall picture, and I get it. I totally get the idea of looking at the overall picture. And he's calling it Gibson Brands. You know, I mean, this is a you know, it's not just about the guitars anymore. I get that. But at the same time, if I'm hearing so many people coming back and saying, oh, man, they're just not, it's just not like it used to be. Or you know, I can't believe this is a Gibson guitar and it's got this shoddy workmanship to it. You know, I think that, to me, I don't know, it speaks to me as you're hurting your brand.
I think that's particularly true when you even hear that from people who are marquee players for Gibson. It's one thing to have, you know, some anonymous troll on my Les Paul forum saying, oh, it's not like what it used to be. But when you hear guys like Joe Bonamassa has a signature model, or Jimmy Page, who has a signature model, saying, you know, I have to send it to my tech, or I need to have the body pulled apart to have the neck carved right and have a long tenon joint put in, or the top carved right, or put in the appropriate pots or caps, that doesn't bode well for lower model offerings from them,
mm-hmm.
especially considering when you have all that additional work to it done to the guitar from, you know, a setup shop. That's several thousands of dollars of worth of work right there.
Yeah.
I mean, at that point, you know, I would much rather, again, go ahead and look at somebody who's a smaller builder, like a Johann Gustafsson or even a Collings, and pocket the difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess so. Or buy vintage.
Well, what do you think of this? What about, you know, how many years ago was it when they got raided with all the, you know, the
that
FBI
was,
or the government came in? I mean,
the last time was 2011.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think that had to really hurt them bad?
Oh, it definitely. I mean, it was a six-figure settling on that. So,
yeah.
I mean, that really, that definitely put a dent in things, for sure. You know, and also and to be honest with you, that was ridiculous that happened to them.
Did you see there was a line that came out, I don't know, maybe a couple of years ago? It was called the Government Series. Did you see those?
Yes.
They had Vs, they had all that stuff. And it basically was, what, the guitars that got taken away and they got them back and they finished them, I guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, and honestly, whoever it was in the marketing department that thought of that was pure genius.
I almost bought one. I almost did. I almost bought a V. But I was like, ah, I don't need another V.
That was genius. You know.
What's so crazy, of course, is Henry J., in an op-ed piece not too long ago, saying that, you know, we should have more stringent enforcement of the CITES regulations. So which Henry J. do you want to believe? The Henry J. that goes ahead and talks on the Heritage Foundation and addresses the Tea Party, or the Henry J. says, you know, I think it's a good idea to have a little tighter regulation on these kind of things.
Yeah, I think any businessman is going to do whatever it takes to make his business work. I think, Daly, that's what it comes down to there. So, do businessmen talk out of both sides of their mouths? Yeah, most of them do. I think so.
Yeah, well, I was telling you earlier about some of these interviews I was watching with that guy. And he was saying that they were telling him that he should start making guitars in Madagascar or something. Did you see that interview?
No, I didn't see that one.
That's the government telling them to do that.
To make guitars in Madagascar.
Yeah, that way they won't have all these restrictions. Because how many other builders around the world buy guitars from all over the world? You know, and they're not under that kind of scrutiny.
It's crazy to see that they wanted it produced in Madagascar, given that was one of the biggest areas which are subject to deforestation, particularly amongst the indigenous primate populations there.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, you know, I mean, the whole thing, it got out of control, too, with the you know, it's also the consumer, too. I mean, I know of one particular collector in New York, and he goes by the name of Brazilian Rosewood Boy. And that's what he wants. That's what he looks for. He looks for the guitars that have the Brazilian rosewood. And if they don't, he doesn't want them. He wants the Les Pauls with that. And he's got, just a room full of Les Pauls with Brazilian rosewood.
If we can go back to a slightly earlier point, and since we're talking about QC a little earlier, this is one thing that always pops up in my mind, since all of us were having difficulties trying to figure out how many SKUs Gibson actually had in their lineup. You know, my last count, when I counted Les Pauls by themselves, they had nearly 130 from Gibson USA alone.
Yeah.
Let alone what they're offering from Epiphone, which I think was nearly 80.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems to me, if I were a product manager, I'd want to rein that in a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, I would have, you know, like a handful of modern guitars for those guys who want to have, you know, a full-on shred machine, or a handful of classic offerings, say some with a big old chunky late 50s neck and some of the slim tapered,
mm-hmm.
and limit my color options that way. When you look at the number of SKUs that PRS has, most of their models are only like two or three colors. And that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we could say the same thing about Fender in regards to SKUs,
sure.
Don't you think?
Yeah, that's why I said that before. They have, you know, the Mexican ones, the Chinese ones. They have so many different
versions. Yeah, but even in their American line, they've got the Clapton, the this guy, the that guy. It just goes on and on and on.
Right. So,
I will argue, however, Fender's QC is better.
No, this is true.
Yeah, I mean, I have a Fender Mexican-built guitar, and it's actually really good. I was shocked how good it was.
I'm telling you, man, I'm more and more, as I get older and mature, I look more and more towards the modular guitar. You know, the guitar that, okay, something happens to the neck here, I can just pop that neck off, pop on another neck, and I can do, you know, it's a, you know, and that's how Fender designed the guitar. I mean, he designed the guitars that working musicians could work on the guitar themselves.
Right.
That was the whole point of it. You know, the Gibson has always been, to me, has always been, you know, and I'm talking as an old guy now, I'm sounding old by saying this, but it's like the Cadillac, you know, or the Mercedes of guitars. To me, it always was that, in that genre. But seeing what they're doing with the, you know, the fret work like that, and then the mini tuners, I wondered early on before we even decided to talk about this and before this article came out, I said to myself, is this just a problem with marketing? You know, that somebody in marketing or somebody in research and development is just off the wall crazy and they need to get fired or retrained? Or is this just a direction that they want to go in?
Steve, do you want to take that?
I don't know. I still can't understand how much of a change they made this year. It's drastic, if you ask me. It wasn't, you know, just one little thing they changed. They changed quite a bit, you know, the width of the neck, I think it was called the zero nut. Is that what that is?
Yeah. Zero fret, yeah.
Zero fret, yeah. I mean, it's just, that's dramatic changes, in my opinion.
And I mean,
you can't get it without it. That makes no sense.
Yeah, and the price went up.
And last year you could either get it with the auto tuner or without. You had an option.
Right.
You know, but you don't. They're not. I don't understand why they would just make it so. This is what you have to have.
Right.
Take it or leave it. Well, people are leaving it.
Well, it seemed to me that, I mean, if it's a problem with the marketing or marketing or product managers, they're actually not. It doesn't seem like they're really talking to the customer all that much.
No.
I mean, are they immune to customer feedback? From what I understand, it is that, you know, with Henry J., it's a very top-down management style. It's his way or the highway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually read that, too. I read some letters from former employees, and that's what basically, if you spoke your mind, it was like, okay, there's the door.
Sure. Read any sort of review from Glassdoor, and they'll tell you that. And I've talked to guys who worked at the custom shop, and they've all kind of said the same thing. These guys are well-known builders in their own right, so they're not nobodies in the industry.
Yeah, well, there was an expose on Gawker.com that came out about that very subject, about how it was just an unpleasant place to work, and that, like you said, top-down management.
You know, the Russians have a great saying, which is, of course, the fish rots from the head down.
Yeah.
So, hey, I've got a question that's been kind of eating at me, which is, of course, obviously there's a lot of financial might behind keeping the Gits and Guitar brand afloat. And obviously the part of that's due to, of course, the outsourced Epiphones from Korea and China and historically from Japan. Now, we do know, of course, that Guitar Center is one of the big dealers for Gibson, but they've also been having their financial problems too. What happens if Guitar Center starts to tank, and what does that mean for Gibson?
Yeah, but I thought Guitar Center has been tanking.
Oh yeah,
it has. Yeah, it's just a matter of time for Guitar Center. I mean, how much longer can they get bailed out on this? I mean, it's a junk bond. It's been a junk bond. The people that were originally there in the beginning are gone. They took the money and ran. So, you know, it's just a matter of time. And it was a really bad business plan to do with.
Well, I'm sure most people know this, but, you know, you buy something from Musician's Friend or Music 123 and Guitar Center, they're all the same company.
Right, and I think that's where it's going to go. I think you're going to have your flagship stores for Guitar Center, and I think the rest is going to be that online purchase through those web outlets.
And I tell you, not to cut you off, but I mean, I bought something from Musician's Friend, and it came and it had a Guitar Center flyer in it. And I'm like, okay. I mean, I knew about Music 123 and Musician's Friend, but I didn't know Guitar Center was part of them now, too.
Yeah,
I'm actually thinking about the flagship stores. Yeah, I think you're right.
I think that kind of is really where it's going to go. I think that's what's going to happen in regards to all of those players that stock their stuff at Guitar Center now. They're going to end up going through, they're going to have to go through that route. And eventually, maybe it'll force people like Gibson and other makers like that to allow a mom and pop store to be able to afford to keep Gibson products and whatever products in their store.
Yeah, but I think that's going to have to change a lot for the mom and pop shops to get those lines, because I thought Gibson had, like, you know, you had to sell so many of them, that's how you had the line. So,
yeah, oh, and you had your opening order too, which is...
Yeah, for like mom and pop shops, I mean, I don't know if you've heard of Anderton's UK.
Yeah.
That, those guys do those videos all the time.
They're great, I love those guys.
And Rob Chapman came out with a Chapman guitar line.
Yes. Yes.
Doing phenomenal.
Yo, great stuff.
And there's a guy, Riff City Guitar, is a small, you know, guitar store. I don't know, I think they're in the central U.S. somewhere, I'm not sure where, but, you know, he brought them over and they did a bus tour, went around to all these different mom and pop shops. And it was like this, you know, you thought, you know, Elvis was coming to town, the people that were coming out to see him, that's how big that guy was from just his YouTube videos.
Mm-hmm.
And now to have a guitar line out, I mean, that's phenomenal that somebody can do that. Well, mm-hmm. You know, you're not going to see those guitars at Guitar Center. But again, you're not going to see Gibsons in those mom and pop shops either, unless they change the way they do their distribution, you know.
Yeah, so I do think, too, is that I did talk to a guy who was a single owner operator in a shop here in California, and he was saying that one of the reasons why he dropped Gibson was due to the order minimums that you have to keep on the floor, plus you have to carry all the rest of the P&A stuff. So I think the opening minimum order you have to have for your preseason was $30,000 to $60,000.
Jeez.
Plus you had to have, I think, you know, $5,000 to $10,000 worth of gear on the floor. I mean, that's probably more business than a lot of those places do. I mean, let alone if you wanted to carry another marquee brand with you, say like Taylor or Martin,
mm-hmm.
or Fender.
Right.
Yeah.
And God bless Rob Chapman for doing what he's doing. I think he's he seems like a genuinely nice guy, and best of luck to him. Hey, at least he's making money doing this.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's making money off it. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Man, he's, you know, I've seen he's done clips where he's done the factory tour over in Korea. You know, and there, you know, he's walking through there, and you see ESPs being built, and you're like, oh, okay. So they're all made in the same factory.
Mm-hmm.
Just a matter, you got to go over there with a product line, and you can, with somebody like him, because he has such a huge following on YouTube, it was easy for him to market himself.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
he can only get his guitar in Riff City, and I think one other shop in the U.S. So, But with mail order, they're probably flying out the door.
Well, and see, that's another thing too. I think more and more people, and this isn't me, I can't do this, but I think, and I know you can, Steve, you're good about this. More and more people are comfortable and getting more and more comfortable with the idea of, I read about the guitar online, I saw it online, this is the price that it's selling, I don't have to try it before I get it, just send it to me. So I think as more and more people get comfortable with that, old farts like me probably won't, but I think that might be an opportunity for people like Gibson and Fender, because Fender now is selling direct to the customer.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think Paul Reed Smith hasn't been shy about that change in the market. In fact, he said there's a couple of YouTube videos saying he actually welcomes that kind of change, because if you've got your QC down, it's very little risk for the customer. But if your QC is all over the map, that's where it becomes problematic. So theoretically, you get yourself a new, you know, entry-level standard, but the frets aren't dressed, and you know, maybe the intonation is all wonky, and the pickups aren't set correctly, then are you going to take it over to a guitar tech and have him spend $200 to get that thing dialed in? Or are you simply going to ask for a call tag and send it back?
Yeah,
because that kind of freight adds up really quickly.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, though. Like, when you buy something musicians-friendly, if there's a problem, you send it back, you know? And they'll see they're sending you a new one. I mean, it's I don't know how the, you know, free shipping on all that stuff too. They must have some immaculate deal with UPS and FedEx or whatever on shipping rates, because I mean, I've gotten guitars I've had to send back. But you know what you were saying before about taking it and taking it to a tech. See, I guess I don't look at it that way because I do all that stuff myself. You know, I taught myself how to do all those things. So if I get a guitar, if I see a guitar that's like a return, they call it a scratch and dent or a blem, and it's $300-$400 off the normal price, I'll buy it, because like this Les Paul Special Pro that I got, you know, it came and the intonation was a little off. I changed the gauge strings. I was having some tuning issues, but I worked on it for an hour and it's immaculate now. Mm-hmm. But the average guy buying it would have been like, this is horrible, I got to send it back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and people don't have the money to go, you just spent money on a guitar. Why would I need to go take it someplace to get it set up?
Well, see, I think that's another thing that a lot of, I mean, most companies, it does work that way. It's rare that you get guitars that come to you. Like there was a time phase during Charvel, before Charvel was owned by Fender, where you got it right out of the box and it was ready to go. Hamer was like that back in the day too.
But that's how the Paul Reed Smiths are too, though.
Yeah,
they're set up perfect when you get them.
Yeah. It's funny because, and I know Adam and I have discussed this, is that we kind of feel like if either of the big two were ever to go away, and after reading what I've read in the Tennessean and been looking at, I don't think Gibson will ever go away. But if either one were to go away, I think the logical replacement would be PRS.
Yeah, I would think so, yeah. If you had to choose, that would be, you know, it depends on what you want to spend, too, you know, so.
Well, I'm talking about that high-end, you know, really, really, I mean, all points decorated guitars, you know, and that's, I think Paul Reed Smith is right in that category.
Yeah, without a doubt.
At least they have the name recognition, that's for sure, and they have the production size to be able to fill that kind of niche.
Right.
And personally, I'd like to see them do something more like a Telecaster at a certain point. That would be kind of groovy.
That would be cool.
Yeah, I told you, you know, the thing is, I told you that one time about the Ted Nugent had posted some prototype guitars that Paul Reed Smith made of them.
Oh, yeah.
Semi-hollow bodies. I couldn't believe it. They were like, they don't even make a production run like that, and they were building them for him. I don't know if you ever found those pictures, Mark, but I remember telling you about it.
Yeah, no, I never saw them.
Yeah. Unbelievable guitars. I mean, it was crazy.
I can't imagine a semi-hollow or an arch-top Paul Reed Smith.
Well, they do make a semi-hollow. I actually have one of them.
Yeah.
And of course, the new Neil Schon model.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, you know, it's a fully hollow body with a Floyd.
Yep.
That I haven't seen that. I have to see that.
Yeah, that's a crazy guitar.
Mark lives under a rock.
Apparently so.
He's too busy playing with Fenders.
Yeah, that's it.
He hasn't grown up enough to know how to play a real man's guitar.
I'm here in Fenderland, man.
Yeah, well, the thing is, too, obviously Mark's left-handed, so it's a little harder for him to even go out and try. I mean, I don't even know if I've seen a left-handed Paul Reed Smith anywhere ever.
I've played two in my whole life. I've seen two and played them. One I hated, and the other one was the most amazing thing ever.
Yeah. Were they old, like when they first started out?
One was when they first came out, and I was actually at the Sam Ash in Hempstead, Long Island.
I've been there.
And that was the bad one. That one was like, ugh, this is horrible. It was like playing a potato chip with strings on it. And the next one was at the Guitarlington show in Arlington, Texas, about 3 years ago, and that thing it was Guitar Sanctuary had it there out of San Antonio, I think, and holy cow, that thing was like it was like the guitar was made for me. It was crazy. It was amazing. Yeah. $4,500, I think it was.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's why it was made just for you.
Just for me.
For $4,500.
I do think in terms of just in terms of market representation and sheer production size. I mean, theoretically, if Ibanez wanted to step up their game, they could easily fill in that kind of niche too. But I think part of the thing is, of course, though they've produced some really expensive guitars, like some limited model, you know, limited run Steve Vai guitars and George Benson and so on, they're not known as a marquee high-end brand.
No,
but they actually make really good guitars. Everyone I've ever played has been great.
They have. They really do make great guitars, yeah.
Yeah, even their Chinese-made ones are surprisingly acceptable guitars.
Yeah.
But I don't see how you can convert, say, a diehard Gibson guy into, say, you know what you really want is an artist model.
Yeah, right.
Or even say, like, remember back in the early 80s when Gibson was really on the ropes, and all of a sudden you started seeing all these SG-2000s from Yamaha appear.
Yeah.
Now, sure, construction, if you take a look at a cross-section of them, they're pretty similar to what Gibson was doing at that point, but it was a hard sell, even though Santana was using them.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I'm not really sure what the deal is. I'm not really sure if we've settled anything or come to any conclusions here.
I don't know. We just talked about a bunch of different manufacturers, too, that are probably going to step up a lot.
I think so. If things continue to go the way they go, but, you know, what you said earlier, Steve, which was it should be really interesting to see what the 2016 models are like.
I think it's going to make them or break them.
Yeah, NAMM is going to be. It's going to be really interesting. NAMM at this January and seeing what they do. I mean, you know, for 2014, NAMM actually said that. Let me get this right here. Hang on. It says fretted instruments in general and electric guitars specifically saw an uptick in 2014, according to the industry's annual report. They saw an overall volume rose 2% to 1.13 million guitars, electric guitars, while estimated retail volume increased 8.3%, $505.9 million, according to NAMM.
Well, the one thing I think is kind of interesting, too, is where you see a lot of that kind of growth market is not necessarily, say, for your $500 to $1,500 guitars. It's for a lot of your marquee sort of $3,000 on up. I mean, obviously, you're not selling 1.5 million, $5,000 guitars, but it is it's the only segment of the market that's been salient for since 2008.
Yeah, since the bubble burst.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, I mean, that does mean the market did drop from some of the, people paying $500,000 for, 5960 Burst.
Yeah.
But, they're still going for $275,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a crazy amount of money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there are going to be people that are going to be listening to this and going to be going, what's the matter with these three guys? You know, and I just
want have got.
I want everybody to realize we really love Gibson guitars. And the reason we're having this conversation is because of that allure of all these years. You know, I mean, I'll be honest with you. The first time I ever saw a Gibson guitar and knew that it was a Gibson guitar was when I saw Ace Frehley play.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, and I was like, wow, what's that? And then on the back of all their albums, you remember on the back of all their albums, it used to be Kiss plays Gibson guitars because they want the best.
Yeah.
And those were Norlin-era guitars. You know.
Remember when they had that Ace Frehley one in Manny's in Manhattan?
Yes.
And it got picked over. People were taking parts out of it. Yeah. I remember seeing it in the front window, and it was like missing something every time I went back. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's okay. I think Mark hit upon something which was also really important. I think that's one of the reasons why people are so cheesed off, because, of course, they were the premier marquee American guitar brand for such a long time. Mm-hmm. It'd be one thing if it kept like really high standards and everyone's happy, as opposed to going with some really head-scratching moments in terms of current production. Now, the one of the things I was talking to Mark before we went on the air is, like, what would you look at as an alternative to see if tomorrow Gibson disappeared?
Yeah.
Well, I'd go into my closet and play all my old ones. But for an alternative, I mean, I've got some Paul Reed Smiths. I like those a lot. You know? Yeah, Gibson's not going to go away.
No, they're not going to go away. But it would be Paul. For me, it would be Paul Reed Smith.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I'm happy with them. But I'm still buying Gibsons. I mean, I just told you I got this Les Paul Special. It was like, It just came out maybe a couple months ago.
Yeah, and the Collings, I really like those a lot. They're made right here in Austin, actually, and the Heritage, the ones that are still made in.
Kalamazoo,
right?
Yeah. I was looking at some of those the other day.
Those are the ones I think are really, I think those are viable, and I think those are viable brands as far as brand recognition. You know, because I was looking at Adam's notes, and a lot of the other ones that you mentioned here are amazing guitar companies and really make great guitars, but as far as brand recognition is concerned, I don't see them making a big splash.
No, I mean, they're kind of known by people who are in the know.
Right.
I mean, let's see a show of hands for people who know who CMG guitars are, or Moniker, or
right.
Midas.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know CMG, but I knew the other one.
Moniker's fairly new. They're a fairly new company, and they've actually made a pretty big splash already, considering they're fairly new. They make a great guitar. Oh, my God. Just great stuff. You know, I mean...
So you said CMG, right?
Yeah. They're Chris Martin guitars. They're from South Carolina.
Okay. I'm looking at them now. Do they have an import line as well?
No, they're all done domestically.
Because that's pretty cheap.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking at one on Reverb Nation right now for $800.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yes.
Don't get me started. I better hang up now.
I will say, after playing one of the Ashley guitars, for me, more so than any other new Gibson I've tried in the last 5 years, in terms of just that physical girth on your body, that big chunky neck, that big growling, snarly, angry sound, I think they've really nailed all those points.
Yeah.
For me, as a player, $800, it's kind of hard to say no.
Yeah, no.
Despite what it says on the headstock.
Yeah.
What does it say on the head? I didn't get to the headstock. I'm sorry, I'm looking at it while we're talking.
I mean, some of the guitars that have a hippie sandwich look, I think I need to go ahead and have some sort of button front shirt. I didn't down button two of my belt buckle and wear some flares to go with, but that way I can show off my Burt Reynolds chest toupee.
There you go.
Yeah, that's unbelievable price. That's crazy.
I'm going
for USA made. Wow.
Yeah, and they're beautiful.
I'm bookmarking it.
Uh-oh.
It says they're in Georgia, huh? I think they're in Georgia.
Yeah. They're actually a company I'd like to talk to. I'd like to talk to somebody from there, see what they're all about, get them on the show. That'd be kind of fun. So we were talking about solutions. If anybody was ever willing to listen to us... I would say number one thing is to get your QC under control. If you're going to keep raising your prices for this incredible name, this incredible brand, and what this guitar means after 121 years, get your QC under control. That, I think, is number one. I think that's the most important thing. Adam had written here, he had put down, bring all U.S. production under one roof. Why, Adam?
I mean, part of it is so that way you can have the same sort of standards for acoustic and electric, and you can also share brain trust with that. You know, because I would argue the fact that the making an acoustic guitar is infinitely more complex than putting together a an electric.
Right. Okay.
Also, you would lower production costs because you don't have to pay for more than one facility.
True, but it'd be a bigger facility, so you got to heat it either way, right? I thought limiting your number of SKUs, I think, is important.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say.
Yeah.
If you want the auto-tuning thing, have it as an option.
Right. Do you think there should be a Korean or an Indonesian Gibson?
No. I think if they did that, well, you know, if they did it, the quality would probably be just as good, if not better, than what they're making now. And the lower-end models, anyway.
Or as good as an Epiphone, anyway.
Yeah.
Which, I gotta say...
I've played some Epiphones, and...
There are some great Epiphones.
Maybe I haven't played one in a while, but ESPs, to me, are really well made.
Yeah.
The imports, you know, the LTD model or whatever. And so, you know, if the Epiphones don't feel like that to me for some reason.
I mean, Adam, I just sent you that Epiphone Dot.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great guitar.
Yeah. I mean, for what it retails for, it's an astonishingly good guitar.
Yeah.
I think the Samick made Korean made Epiphones are at very least as good as what was coming out of Japan in the 70s and 80s, barring the Sonex line, if you remember those.
I do. I knew a guy that had one of those.
I mean,
I see them at the shows all the time.
Yeah, that's right. We see them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Are they in a dumpster?
No. They're selling for almost $2,000.
Yeah. What?
Yes.
And what are they? What were they made of? Some kind of compound or something? Or
yeah, it was. I think it was
plastic.
plastic and particle board.
You met a guy at work. It felt like plastic when he brought it in. I was like, that's why I lived in Long Island. A guy I knew had one.
This sounds like a Parker.
Yeah. Forgot about Parkers. There's just so many manufacturers out there. It's crazy, you know. But like, you know, I'm still blown away at the CMG guitars. How, you know, if made in USA, that's a pretty unbelievable low price.
And they're beautiful. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what they sound like. I don't know what they feel like, but they're beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, I think too. This goes back to Mark's point. Do I think it would be a good idea to Gibson make a Korean or Japanese made Gibson? I personally don't think so. I think that gives the brand name a bit of a black eye. And if you wanted to have those price point instruments, you know, that's of course where Epiphone is kind of lame for the last couple of decades.
Yeah.
And that is their offset brand or whatever you want
it
to call it.
Really is. And it has been for quite a while. I mean, because, you know, prior to Gibson owning Epiphone, they didn't do Les Pauls, you know, but there are Epiphone Les Pauls. I mean, it has Les's signature on, has that same silk screen on there, you know, but, you know, I just, that's one of the things that concerns me. I hope that doesn't happen. I would not like to see that happen, but I will say there are some Epiphone models that are really, really good.
Yeah. I haven't played one in so long. I guess that's why it's hard for me to really judge it.
The Epiphone, they for a little while, they were making an Explorer.
Yeah, yeah. I think they still do.
I don't know if they do anymore, but it was amazing. It was great. It was a great guitar.
Yeah, same specs pretty much, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's some metric. I mean, there are. I think it is metric, but it's still, it's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you are a working musician, it seems to make sense. Say, if you're going to clubs, you're touring around in a car or in a van, and you didn't want to have run the risk of damaging or losing an expensive instrument. So I think it kind of behooves you to get some metric replacement pieces from Tone Pros and maybe drop in some good quality pots and pickups.
Yeah, absolutely.
In a noisy bar, you're not going to notice the subtle nuances between that and a high-end collectible.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's right. Anytime, I mean, there's guitars that I have that I'm like, that's never going to be on a stage, you know. But then there's the ones I buy that, like, I don't care what happens to this one. But yeah, you spend top dollar on a Gibson Les Paul, $4,000 or $5,000. I mean, unless you're on a world tour with a giant tour bus, I don't think you're going to be bringing it out to the show.
Right, right. Well, Steve, you've got guitars in different cities.
Right? I do.
That, you know, okay, if you jump in there.
Does your other guitars know about that?
My other guitars know about it. They wonder where it went, where they're at. When they're coming home, they want to know.
Where have you been?
I have amps and cabinets, too, back east.
How many Gibsons do you own now, Steve?
I don't know. I know I told you how many I had before, but I don't remember what that number was, and I just got another one. So,
I mean, just in the last year, I think you bought six, right? Five or six?
Yeah, somewhere around there. I'm not going to say it out loud. Come on. I have a problem. I'll admit it.
That's okay. It's all right.
You're, it's a good one to have, right? I'm not hurting anybody.
That's right. You're among friends.
Not going to say. Not enough. How's that?
Yeah, there you go. I'm with you.
The appropriate number of guitars is plus one.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, and for me, you know, it's funny. I now, more than ever, at least in the last, in the last 5 years, 6 years or so, I have not even considered the idea of buying a new Gibson, let alone a new Fender. To me now, it's in some respects, it's like, the best years are sort of behind them in that, and that I would go ahead and I would buy something older. But you, Steve, you buy new guitars all the time.
But I buy them when I can get, you know, like I said, this one I just got was, they called it a Blem, but there's nothing wrong with it. Somebody bought it and returned it, and
right.
I saved $300 off the price, so I can probably sell it tomorrow for the same amount, if not more.
Right.
It's a new guitar to me. I mean, it looks like it's brand new.
Yeah. I mean, let's cap this. Do you think that it's their best years are behind them?
No, I think they'll be okay. I think they're gonna turn it around next year. They're gonna have to. I have to have faith in it. You know, it's Gibson, for Christ's sake.
Yeah. Adam?
I think they're going to have to do a lot of heavy lifting in order to bring back people underneath the tent, to be honest with you. I think at a certain point, I think the shareholders might find Henry J's presence there so polarizing that they're going to lose a lot of customers. And then eventually he's going to be shown the door, despite him as many good decisions made early on. But in terms of the best years behind them, unless you're willing to spend an obscene amount of money for like some of the really high-end collectibles, as much as it breaks my heart, I'm going to say yes.
Yeah.
Mark?
Well, for me, yes, only because I don't buy new guitars. I always do this with everything. I lean more towards stuff that's been already played, stuff that's already got some wear and tear on it, stuff that's got songs in it already. But I think that's more of a personal preference than it really is me saying whether I know whether Gibson is not going to be able to bring a really great product to the table anymore. So, I mean, from what I've seen, no, I'm not impressed. I mean, you know, I got a dressing down from from a Gibson rep at a show. Actually, Steve was standing right next to me. I was talking about the frets and everything else, and the guy was, he got very insulted and basically told me off in a very nice way.
He took his ball and went home.
You're my only friend.
But I'm going to say, it's behind them. But we'll see. Like Steve said, I mean, if it's going to be, January is going to be really interesting. I'm really looking forward to seeing what it's going to be. I think a lot of people are waiting to see what January is going to hold for that company, because, especially the people who really love that brand.
Yeah, and the only unfortunate thing about that is they're going to be under such a huge microscope, too.
Yeah.
You know, if somebody says the wrong thing, they're going to hang them, you know, by their toenails.
Oh, yeah. And in the world of the internet, like Adam was saying earlier about, you know, there's a troll at every corner.
Yeah.
You know, when people hear what we've had to say today, they're going to fucking roast our nuts.
Well, it's just opinions, you know, everybody's got one, right?
That's right. They're just like belly buttons.
Yeah. There you go. Close.
I took the escalator up on that.
Okay.
Well, gentlemen, I want to thank you both for taking some time out to talk with me today about this. I respect your opinions, both of you. I think you guys are two of the people that I talk to about guitars more than probably anybody else on the planet. So, other than the audience, and they don't reply in the same way you do. But I want to thank you for being involved today.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you.
So we're going to sign off here, folks. I want to thank Steve Cohn. And Steve, he's got a brand new album out. It's called One of Three. It's his first solo album in a while, outside of Cyanide Scream. And it's a really great disc. And folks, you can go and get that at Amazon, iTunes, anywhere you download music. And don't steal it. Go pay for it.
There's a lot of those places out there, too.
Yeah. Don't steal it. Pay for it. Okay? Stop it. Just pay for it. And Adam, how can people reach out to you if they want to yell and scream at you?
Well, I'm on LinkedIn. That's a good way to track me down. You can find some archival material there. And, of course, on the archives on Guitar Radio Show website.
That's right. Well, thank you both. And hold on 1 second, but we're going to sign off here. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks.
Well, there you have it. Thanks to Adam and Steve for coming on to the show. I wanted to mention that Steve's 2 of 3 album is coming out, has actually just come out this January. So you should go and check that out. Steve Cohn, 2 of 3. So there's 1 of 3, 2 of 3, and there's going to be a 3 of 3. And I got to tell you, I thought I really dug 1 of 3. But now that I've heard 2 of 3, holy cow, it's just getting better. So check it out. And like I said earlier, buy it. Don't steal it. Okay? Hey, we got to get out of here. I hope everybody's having a great NAMM show. And I can't wait to see all the gear and see all the pictures and figure out what I'm going to buy next. We got to get out of here. In the meantime, take care of each other. Take care of yourselves. Keep on playing. And we will see you on the next episode of Guitar Radio Show. Peace.
Now everybody say, F*** you, Ed.
I like this crowd already.
Productions.